Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everybody, to the SEO Insider. Brad Geddes, who has been involved in PPC since 1998. He's a co-founder of Adalys, an ad testing and recommendation platform, and a member of the programming team for SMX Events. Brad is the author of Advanced Google AdWords, the most advanced book ever written on the topic. Welcome, Brad.
Oh, thanks for having me, Seth.
You know, this is a great life event for myself. When I first decided to get serious about Google AdWords, I said, okay, who is the speaker, best speaker on this? And it happened to be you were road tripping through, I guess you would live there, but you had an event in DC, and I sat for several days and just sopped up as much knowledge as I could. And I was lucky because you were there. And since then, my team has flown around the country to hear you speak at, from PubCon and other places, just to get the inside scoop on what both fundamentals, but also sort of where you could play around the edges with PPC.
Yeah, and that's the fun part, right? I mean, you got to know the fundamentals, but playing around the edges and seeing what else can be done,
right,
can be enjoyable. Tricky was legal stuff.
No, absolutely. And that is one of those things that I've tried so hard. You know, it's one thing to know it yourself, but to scale it for a team to do it, I find to be one of those great challenges in life. And I think to a certain extent, I almost think the Wizard of Oz reference, which is dependent. So I come from the legal space, meaning that's where I built my business. And we now have Blue Shark that works both within legal and some beyond legal and other professional services. But what I have seen is that the number of people out there that say they do PPC well exceeds the number that do it well. And that, you know, I've always had to say to my team, because in SEO, I know when we are like the best. We, you know, there may be people who do it as well, but like, you know, the fundamentals, it's a question of what resources you have to put at it. When it comes to PPC, you know, there are many times where you feel that you are not worthy because you see people with all sorts of, bells and whistles and claims of data. And when you look under the hood, which we do when a client comes to us and we get to see what's really there, some of the flashiest names in the business, not that impressive. And I'm sure you've seen this over years as you've done that. You know, how do you sort of explain that? Is it that people are so mystified by the whole PPC world that they realize that the fundamentals are so important, and ignoring those, you do at your own peril?
Now, you know what? It's so when you paid search is 85% fundamentals. I mean, like just organization, ad copy testing, and keyword match types, right? With then maybe some remarketing and other stuff you can get into. And so when you talk with the big companies, the problem is scale, right? And that's where, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, we spend $10,000 a month, we have 100 ad groups, we've handwritten all our ads, great, right? Now go be Airbnb or go be Hilton when you suddenly have 10 million ad groups before you get to keywords and ads, right? That's where things break down, is not everyone can scale, and scale's its own almost special skill in paid search.
Understood. And then coming from the legal space where the clicks are so precious that, you know, one of the things that I've seen, and it, you know, when you looked at, you know, there was the whole flash in the pan with like the Reach Local and the Yodels, and they were basically, you give us our money, we're so good at it, trust us that we're going to be able to, you know, do work. And what struck me was you could go to the very best person in the nation, you know, pay them X percent, assuming that they would take your work, and you're going to get really high quality work, presumably, as opposed to the people that sort of knock on your door to do it most rapidly, where it is just about how do I get to a 50% margin?
Now, I have to defend a little bit of that marketplace. I was in that marketplace, right? We had 42,000 accounts under management. And that's about scale, but it's also about what does a business have to advertise with, right? So if you're going to spend $10,000 a month, you should absolutely not use that service.
Correct.
If you're going to spend $500 a month.
Understood. You have to.
You have to, right? And so there is a place for it. Legal is probably not its place.
Correct.
It's just too expensive, right?
Understood. And that's one of those ones where when your clicks start to get towards $100 a piece, you really need to be very, the mistakes can't be there. Whereas if it's, you know, $2 to $5 clicks, you can make a certain amount of errors. It's better to do that than not be in there at all.
Exactly.
Talk to me about 2021. What should we expect in the paid search space for 2021?
Oh gosh. So we're going to see third party cookie, first party cookie, audience shakeup stuff. Right. And that's
hard to explain.
What? Yeah. So you've got, you know, we've all sort of gone through GDPR already. Right. And most Americans went, well, I'm not serving ads to Europeans. I could care less about this GDPR thing. Let everyone else worry about this. Right. And totally acceptable. Right. If you're only in this country, you have CCPA, the California Privacy Act, which now if you do business in California, you have to follow that. You have Apple getting rid of some third-party cookie stuff, so it's first-party. You have Chrome getting rid of some third-party. You have cookie limitations coming into place for 30-day first-party cookies. So in the end, right, this gets right back to resources. Most people can't manage this. You can't figure out how you do your tracking independent of Google versus Apple, or if someone is on Apple but on Firefox, we need to treat that differently than Apple on Chrome. Most people can't do this, right? So you're going to let the engines do this for you, right? Say, hey, this is what we want to do. You figure out how to serve these. What it means is you have to be careful of your year-over-year analysis work with attribution modeling, with how certain things work, because if you have a long sales cycle, it's going to get lost. You're not going to see what caused a click and closed it later in some of this new world. So that's going to be a data thing. And with the rollout of Google Analytics 4, which allows for some tracking in some of this, it'll be an important transition. Now, I'm still looking into GA4. I can't fully explain it yet. There's a lot of sort of under the hood changes, but that'll be an important part. But along with this, right, is COVID did an interesting thing from a paid search standpoint. So one, of course, was accelerated e-commerce. That story's been hashed. It's been told. E-commerce, of course, tripled in, you know, whatever.
And we saw that, just to be fair, we saw that in the legal business, in the sense that relationship marketing, referrals way down, digital way up.
Yep. Like everyone saw that part. But what else happened is suddenly a lot of companies were trying to figure out how do we, with lockdown statuses, right, different by state, how do we customize our ads by state at scale? And so we saw a lot of people suddenly move into things like ad customizers, third-party data sets coming in. And I think we're going to see this trend continue of people being more personalized with features that have been around for years, right? That this isn't new, right? Ad customizers, not new at all, but using it in creative ways because they had to figure it out for COVID. And now they're like, oh, we could do all this other stuff with these things that have been sitting there and we just never bothered to learn.
Can you keep going with that? Because that's really interesting.
Yeah, sure. So let's say you are a credit card company, right? Something as simple as a credit card company. Well, one of the things you look at are by credit card, what's the current APR you need to work with? Right now, if the APR changes, which it does, you don't want to go change all your ads. You could use one simple ad customizer to change that at once.
Gotcha.
Okay, that's a simple example, but it's one sheet now you're doing and not editing 1,000 ads. Two, right? The one of the powerful ones is locations. So you can put in your ad just a placeholder that says Echo user location. You then list all the locations people live. You list how you want to call it because some location names are just too long to put into ads. And then you could put like, you know, find your lawyer in city name. And then you've got to have a backup, right? So it could be Virginia, Maryland, whatever. But if Google knows that person's location, they can look up even my zip code, say, here's the city name. Let's pop that into the ad. And so now you've customized geography at scale. And now that you've got backup text for customizers, you can do this. So this is a 6 or 7 year old feature, right? It's not new at all, but we saw its adoption and usage grow substantially in 2020. We are going to see probably some more match type changes. For good or bad, most people consider these bad if you follow paid search really closely, but we'll see a little more match type changes and some change to search query data. Google pulled some of the query data out already. We'll see a little bit of fluctuation in there. We're going to see some more ad extensions because every year we get more ad extensions. So we'll just see some more of those. That's a pretty easy one to list out. We're going to see more audience possibilities, which is good. So as the death of the third-party cookie and your tracking happens, Google's saying, well, people need stuff. So we've had, you know, industry and company size in beta for a year and a half. We should see some of those leave beta and some new ones be introduced. So if you're B2B and you only want to reach enterprise companies, you can use these to do it, right? Which is a really tough thing to do in B2B. More pushing of automation by Google. And from an agency perspective, I think the internal argument is going to start being, should we still be a Google partner? We see this now where Google's pushing their optimization score. They pulled support last year for small and mid-sized agencies, left it for large agencies. Some of the partner program of, hey, we'll pass leads, we'll do these things for you, haven't materialized that well. And we often see some of the best accounts have terrible optimization scores and some of the worst ones have really good ones. And so if you're forced to have a certain optimization score, which is Google's grade, right? Not your client's grade. I think we're going to see some agencies stop being partners. And I think it'll be interesting debate to see played out over this year.
And it's like something I've struggled with. We have not gone all in because we felt that there were certain elements, particularly for our clients, that they were pushing things that were not always in the client's best interest.
Yep.
And that it would get us more, you know, love. I could get people on sales calls with us if we did certain things, but that I felt that there were, you know, like anything else, our job is that Google is sitting there selling that if there's not somebody between the client and Google figuring out what's right for them and what's not versus what's right for the agency that will get them the most love and the most prestige, it's pretty tricky waters to navigate because it's a big pull as an agency to want to have that Google love, but I am very torn about some of the things that you're sort of forced to push towards in order to get that love.
Yeah, and this, as Google gets more aggressive with recommendations, right? So let's say you've got a bankruptcy lawyer client. Well, you can't do remarketing, right? You're just not allowed to do remarketing because it's inferring someone's income level and so forth. So you can't do it. But if part of the score is, are you doing remarketing? Your option is to do something you're not allowed to legally do, or not legally. Legal is the wrong word here. Google approved, right? Or two, take a bad optimization score. So you have no option, right? And that's as Google adds these, they don't say, oh, we can't do remarketing in healthcare when it is STD testing. We can't do remarketing when it comes to certain things about you know, financial statuses. And that's where it gets really tricky to navigate.
We're seeing pressure to move towards like smarter automated campaigns. That's one of the, would love your thoughts, A, about that, and B, is the juice worth the squeeze now? I mean, again, I'm coming from a specific world. I don't see it fully yet for our boutique world, but I assume at scale, there are places where it may work wonderfully.
You know, so I have highly mixed result, highly mixed thoughts on automated bidding. So let's take Target CPA, probably the one with the most historical data. Works well for 95% of people, right? You flip it on, it does its job. You got more than about 30 conversions. It does well. Will you get the last 10 to 20% of efficiency out of it? No, you won't. Do you have... If you look at your data and you see some clear trends by time of day, geography, age groups, income levels, you're better off doing manual bidding and using bid modifiers. Is everything about the same? There's not big changes and you're time constrained. It would rather do something else instead. It's a great solution. So it, I don't think it's a, it's often a, do we want the last 20% of juice out of this, right? If no, or we could spend our time better doing X instead, right, for the client. Ben Ami Bidding is a great solution. If you're a client who just gets 5 or 10 leads a month, it's highly inconsistent. You're not going to get your results well. It just, you know, machine learning needs data, right? You get too little data, it's not going to work. So it's great when it works. It's not more efficient than a human who truly understands their data. If you're feeding your own data in, you're better off as well. With the removal of search queries, though, it is harder for some people to beat Google because you don't have the same data they're working with, right? Which is the downside. So overall, good solution. Would I use it on someone spending $100 a click? Probably not. That's just, you know, a few clicks here and there make too big of a difference.
Gotcha. Well, bring you to that local search, you know, high dollar local search. What are some of the advice you give to somebody in that space? What are some of the best practices you see looking across campaigns that you get to see all sorts of different campaigns?
Sure. So one, make sure you've got your geographies correct. And this includes looking through the advanced feature of people in versus people interested in, right? Because Google changed the people regularly in my geography. Big change there. Often you want the more local setting. Number one. Number two, and this is just inherent in smaller accounts, don't use overused broad matches because you want more impressions, because it just leads to some really bad stuff. Three, when Google assigns completely different quality scores to keywords that you feel are the same, there may be a reason and organization around it. Attorney versus lawyer. You always see different numbers, right? They need to be different ad groups of echoing attorney versus lawyer. It's a subtle difference. Well, if you're a lawyer, it's not a subtle difference. For most people, right, it's a subtle difference, but there is definitely a difference. Make sure you've still got your ad group organization correct, right? Look at what is the geography? Are you echoing the geographies in the ad? Why are you as a local business better than a national business? You often have really good reasons. Have you tested out locally owned and things like that? Those are really important. A lot of people, especially these days, are looking to local owned to support it, right, over national companies. If you're a restaurant, you put locally owned restaurant, you'll beat Cheesecake Factory right now. You won't in a year, right? But for now, you will.
Maybe a bad example, that Chinese chicken salad I have a weakness for.
Well, you can't win them all.
No. I know what you're saying. Now, you really want to make sure your local guys are still there. They're closing every day. Yeah. What are some of the mistakes keeping you in our local space? What are some of the mistakes you see people making that are sort of avoidable?
And not using extensions properly, right? If you're local, especially if people come to your place, use your location extension, use your call extension, turn on call tracking. The more data is always better, right? So a lot of times there's call tracking is not enabled. Make sure you claim your listing. I mean, if you do local SEO, you know this, right? But you better own it.
No. We're a couple steps beyond that. Let's hope.
Yeah, I still see them all the time, unclaimed listings.
Well, no, that's for people that aren't playing the SEO game that just do PPC. That could happen, maybe.
Yep.
But you know, you're never cease to amaze. Any software that you like that for again, I'm going to have to try to keep this interview focused on the local professional services, higher dollar click world. Any third party software that you really like?
You know what? So we are good if you break about $10,000 a month in your account. If you're spending $2,000 a month on $10 clicks, we're just not going to help you out, you know, at Alice's. So when you're at the smaller level spends, then scripts are often better than a full third-party software. You'll generally get just better results, and you're not paying a third-party license fee, right? Once you get to where you are scaling and spending $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month and you need something to watch over your back, right? That's when you're more likely to look into third-party software. So like, well, of course, I'll have to toot us, right, analysis, but we're not always a good solution. And we're very honest in that.
No. And I'm saying, so like taking that, and we'll, you know, love to, we'll talk more, even more about what you guys do. But in general, for this type of world, you know, as an agency, we're doing much more than those numbers. But for a lot of our listeners, their accounts are in that zero to $10,000 range.
Yeah. So they're not going to, if they use third-party software, it's going to be the AdWords editor. It's going to be Excel. It's going to be Google Data Studio for reporting. It's going to be Google Analytics for data. They don't need a third party solution. They should keep their margin on that and use some of the free tools, which are really good, overpaying a third party.
What about for keyword research?
Google's tool is very good. I do like SEMrush. I mean, SEMrush, depending on how you want to fall in the naming convention. If you get in the higher level, I also like AdThena to be able to watch competitor ads. So AdThena is probably a more competitive analysis tool. SEMrush is a good keyword research tool and competitor insight tool. SpyFu is similar. I just like SEMrush a little more than SpyFu, but they're pretty similar softwares, assuming they're not listening because they would argue with that.
But we just had the SEMrush on the show not long ago. It's funny when we now have people talking about the different people we've had as guests. What are some of the biggest misconceptions you think that people have that, you know, things that you hear are truisms that are really not truisms?
Oh, gosh. Responsive search ads will fix all your ad serving for you. That's a big one these days. According to Google, you can make one ad group, put all your keywords in it, make a responsive search ad, and walk away. And you won't get very good results. Two, match types are dead, right? You hear this now with all the changes. They are not. Exact match and broad are still quite a bit different. Yes, exact and freeze have a lot of overlaps, but pay attention to your match types. It's still quite important. You hear this all the time that they don't matter anymore. That in local space, the tricky thing I run into is remarketing, because either it just doesn't work. And a lot of local businesses, right, just don't see good results from remarketing. Part of that is either due to it's an industry where there's no comparison shopping. You're going to pick someone that day, regardless, right? Locksmiths and towing companies and whatnot. Remarketing does have its place in the local space for things that are higher purchase values. Sure. You won't see a lot of clicks from them, right? You're just not going to. You may have to open up some of your windows. It's worth it to do remarketing in the local space, assuming you're not an instant gratification type. But don't believe it's going to be all the traffic. So if you get 5 clicks a month, accept your 5 clicks. Don't be like, oh, it's not worth us managing this.
No, I agree. I would say the first dollar spent for most people in the legal space should be retargeting before you even do anything else.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you take all that effort to get somebody to your site, and we're not a locksmith. Somebody may not choose that day. You know, basic mistakes you see over and over again in these sort of local. It sounds like you've done some work in the legal space. What are some of the bigger mistakes you see people making?
Oh God, yeah, trusting Google too much. I mean, I don't want to just Google bash, right? But I mean, in reality, going in and saying, hey, Google says I should do this, let me just hit enter and not use my brain. An educated brain is the best tool you have, period. It's better than machine learning, right? So that would definitely be the number one. Two is looking at whether it's blogs, no offense, podcasts, whatever, and just doing it, right? Not thinking through how does this affect my data? And how does this affect how we do things? Because we'll say things that are good for 90%, but they're not good for 10. Being omni-channel, not being across channels. So even if you're small, you can still be on Facebook and Microsoft and, you know, maybe not Twitter, Pinterest, depending on what your business type is. But there are places beyond Google to spend your money well.
Is there in search, have you seen them? You know, historically there was always a talking point by people in the legal space, you know, don't you know, look at Yahoo, Bing, because even though there's not that much search traffic, you get cost per clicks less. That talking point seems to have disappeared a bunch as the quality search volume has not been there. But is there any place to find quality direct search traffic outside of Google that you like?
I would argue I like Microsoft. Now, their partners you may turn off, right? But if you think of default search on an Apple device, it's Microsoft
at least
by default.
At least for now, right?
Yeah. Well, for now, yes.
What do you see? You know, is Apple going to make a real play at this?
No. They're going to make a play maybe, but it's – and they've got their Apple ads and this and that. Search is hard, right? I mean, you're indexing the web. You're writing algorithms. You're doing a lot of stuff that is behind the scenes and things. And I don't think Apple has the experience. They can choose a search or an Apple Car. I don't think they have the ability to do both directions at once.
You know, the recent headline in legal search has been the LSAs, the local service ads. How do you see those? Our short-term, observation is that they're cannibalizing traditional PPC.
They are.
What do you see happening short-term? What do you see happening long-term?
So LSAs are definitely cannibalizing paid search. And if you're in an area where there's like a Google guarantee, you have to do it, right? The Google guarantee is super
and given
strong.
That they have it, and given that the pricing is so cheap, it's a gift right now. It's not going to last. We know it. That price is going to go up. But for now, it's a gift. So short term, obviously, you know, we're telling people as much budget as you can spend there and then figure out what you want to do.
So
what's going to happen?
Long term, I think Google Guarantee is just going to morph. I think it'll eventually become like a pay-per-lead type of system or something else, right? They've done some pay-per-lead stuff and
that's essentially what it is right now to us.
But the advantage of people who do organic right now is you're focused on reviews. So when some of this review stuff comes in or the third-party verification needs to be done for Google Guarantee and so forth, you already have that done. If you're pure paid search, you might not. So I would say
– right. It was an easy, you know, get the background check done, get people up. And that early, again, the earlier one, it was very interesting. I'm talking about this at PubCon shortly, was that what we saw over and over again was some of the smaller, less established firms had an easier time getting through background checks, whereas legacy firms, it took a bit of push, whether you had somebody at Google helping you or not, that took real effort. But then once people are up and they got everybody in, the number of reviews was a real differentiator.
Exactly. So I think if you're only paid, you haven't focused on reviews, that should be part of your paid search program or added to your organic, or someone needs to do this, right? Just overall, someone needs to do it.
Because you can't fake it. You could have more years in practice, but you can't just immediately have more reviews. So the people that, you know, what we've loved is that it's gone, you know, as what we have generally seen is the LSAs cannibalized the regular PPC, but haven't affected our organic traffic all that much. And if you have the reviews, you could, you know, do some LSA while it's cheap, get yourself in the three pack organically and then the traditional organic. And that seems to be as good as you can get in this particular climate.
And so I'm keeping an eye on that same local space on Amazon. Amazon's done some stuff over time where they'll put up third-party services like maid services and plumbing services, and then they kind of pull back. Then they go forward, and Amazon can't figure out what to do when it comes to non-e-commerce. It's like, you know, Google is bad at people, hence everything social Google does fails. Amazon can't figure out anything that's not e-commerce transaction-based, and so they're struggling there. But expect Amazon to pull something out.
Right, and we've seen that they're already doing it like in the trademark space for their existing clients as an added value. And that may be sort of the legal Zoom world, the wills, the business forms, things like that, that are easier and commoditized and could then work with an outside person. I see that much more, you know, easy to adapt. Not dissimilar to what Google did. They said, hey, we have a need for some sort of verification for locksmiths. And then they said, okay, well, we figured this piece out. We can make money with lawyers. And there's this whole lead gen world that we're not making money on. Let's get lead gen and paid ads rather than just paid ads.
Yep. So I think we'll see more of that, right? As Google tries to figure it out. From a local business standpoint, I mean, it's, you're always reviews first, your name, address, your NAP data second, your paid third. And I would say, don't obviously forget the website, right? When most paid search accounts can't convert, it's not the account, it's the website itself. So of course, good experiences will always be important.
I got a question from our team that recently they've noticed the keyword planner feature in Google Ads is either inaccurate or provides incomplete data. What are the best strategies to mitigate that?
Yeah, so this is interesting time because yesterday someone had told me they believe it's more accurate now than it's ever been before. So I guess everyone's seeing something different. But Google redid the planner, a month, 2 months ago. It wasn't that long ago, maybe 3 months now. Time seems to have no concept these days. The planners, I used it last, it was last week. I had really highly accurate data. So okay. I don't think I have a good answer for you because I haven't seen
that. You
haven't
had that issue?
No.
Okay. Something we've had. As far as, you saw the world change in 2020 and you had to adapt. Are any of those lessons learned ones that even when the world gets back to normal, we should still be powering through that, you were forced to make adjustments based on the pandemic that you think will survive even post-pandemic?
From a paid search standpoint, probably not. From an organizational standpoint, absolutely. Right, we're going to see agencies who no longer want to send 4 people on a plane flight to do an in-person pitch as opposed to using Zoom. We're going to see more relaxed work-at-home policies, right, assuming that you trust your employees, and that's still a whole big issue that's on the sidelines. Well, we'll assume we should trust our employees. I'm not a big company. I can make that assumption.
Well, no, but we've seen this, right? We actually turned our keys in and we'll figure things out after COVID. Yeah. Our lease was up and we're like, we're done. One of the things that I found interesting, as I've seen it both for the law firm and the digital agency, was that your A employees, they were fine at home. There was not a trust factor. They did their work. There might be kid issues at home in certain situations, but people were A people. It was the people that were C people when they were in the office are now C people at home. And I feel that it makes it that much more important to try to raise your bar on employees harder as you scale, because there's always going to be a worst than the best. But that has been, I think, the truism is that it's not like we took the 8 people and all of a sudden they fell apart at home. For the most part, we found those people excelling.
Yeah. And what we haven't found yet is we always talk about a work-life balance, right? I don't think we've found that yet, because you're working at home with kids. It is not how your normal workday would be, post-COVID. And so we haven't A, figured that part out yet. B, we haven't, and this is just a American problem, right? Of we don't know how to not look at our text messages past 8 o'clock at night, right? We don't, or whatever, pick your time. We don't know how to not look at our phone to see the emails coming in from work. So you almost, I've seen companies who have put a cap on their email exchange servers that after 6 p.m. local time to the corporate office, emails don't go out till the next morning, right? Just to the employees can't work. They're like, sorry, we won't send your email right now. It's in the queue, right?
No, which is genius, because I'm old school. I can't believe I'm saying that. I still think I'm young, but I compared to the, at Blue Shark, 95% of the population is 30 or under. And that's probably higher than that. But that, I take the attitude, I have ideas, I'm sending it out. I don't expect somebody to work on it that minute. And no. there's often, I think, some resentment about that message going. So the fact that somebody's thought that through and held off the messages, again, you want a button to be able to push, no, this is important, which obviously usually moves the text. Hey, yeah. Something fell through the cracks, needs to be done once in a blue moon. But that there's so much that because my workday doesn't end. And because I have, 3 kids, I may want to spend time with somebody at one point, which pushes something off. I'm doing this interview so that some task isn't happening. But I find that I feel that particularly, and I don't want to call it millennials or whatever you want to call this, the generation that's working right now, 25 to 30, that there is an expectation that their phone will go off at that time. Now, those are not necessarily the people with kids. And I think the people with kids have become more flexible because they know that things are going to take place and the really great employees will backfill at other points. Certainly what I have done. As we talked before, we went on air here with kids Zooming, there are often moments where you're like, hey, there's a mini meltdown going on. I got to deal with that. And then you make up that time later.
Yep. And I think we're still, I don't think because we're thrown into this, right? I don't think people have truly figured out what a typical at home or at home office hybrid experience looks like. Some companies were going to do 3 days at home, 2 days in the office, right? Just to keep the culture, because culture obviously is a really hard thing to manage when no one's in play, and
it's hard when you're there. It's even harder online. Yeah. We're on fumes, and what's happening with every passing month, another new employee joins. And then all of a sudden you look at it and you're like, hey, X percent of my workforce has never been inside a building. Yeah. And then look, and I think there's some buildings and some friends of mine who have built stuff from scratch online, which is different than you had a model in-house with your happy hours and that interaction that is taken. I would say the only benefit, and it's been more at the law firm than I have, that I've seen at the digital agency, is that as people get families and they move away from the city center, commute times go up. So that people are gaining that time back. That seems to me to be one of those benefits that has happened despite the interruptions during the day, that there's that it's easier to get an 8 a.m. meeting if something falls, if you don't have a mutual time during the day. That's really been advantageous, that we can do, you know, 8:30 or 6, whereas before the person would be sitting in a commute.
Yep, I totally agree. And this was from someone: since 1998, I've spent 4 years in an office. So I've we are a completely digital company. Most of our employees aren't even in the US. We've got a lot in UK.
As we wrap up, can you tell me about your company? I've heard you speak all over the world. I've got great knowledge. How can people work with you both software and privately?
Yes, sir. So Adalysis is our company. It's a software company that does recommendations for Google Ads and Microsoft Ads, how a marketer views them, not how Google views them, right? So it's our sort of rule set, and lets you do a lot of things at scale. So we really are for that. You've got several hundred ads to millions of ads, right? Our largest customer is like 122 million ads. Or you're doing things at a larger price point. You have a lot of data to work with. We make your life so much easier, so much faster, so much more efficient. We're not a good solution for small companies, though, but we're a workflow solution for Google Ads, Microsoft at the mid-size and up level. And then...
What just generally economics of how your software works?
Economics of pricing or economics of how...
No, pricing. Like how does somebody work with you?
Oh, gosh. We start at... It's an automated trial system. We believe in scale, right? So it starts at $99 a month. We're fairly economical. We're not just
not a percentage.
And we're a month to month contract. So you could say, take a 2 week trial. Oh, I'm going to use it for a month and I get what I wanted. Then cancel, right? No problem. No contracts, no nothing. If you really want your legal team to do one, we'll do one, but we prefer not to worry about it.
And are you still doing your courses?
I still teach at SMX, and Simply Learn. So Simply Learn has our PPC courses. SMX is our in-person days, although digital days right now. We'll do two this year. And then I still do some occasional consulting or audit or so forth, which is on bgtheory.com, my personal site.
And I've got to say that of the people teaching, I just think you have a very good way of explaining it. I've really always enjoyed it and highly recommend those courses for people to find, whether it be through SMX or through the other platforms. They've been really tremendous. And I feel confident when we bring people on that, you know, sometimes we bring people on with limited PPC experience, and I want to make sure that they have the fundamentals, that is one of their required viewings before they can touch anything.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
So, look, this has been tremendous. I appreciate it. I can't wait till we are back on the road and I get to see you somewhere in person. But until then, I will be seeing you online and hope to connect sooner rather than later in person.
Excellent. Well, you stay safe and everyone else stay safe and enjoy your digital marketing right now.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.